Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Hello, welcome to the second episode of the Diversity Inside Lacrosse with Nation United podcast. I'm Brian Dawson. I'm the president of Nation United, and I'm joined by one of my co-directors here, Jeremy Audrey, who is in charge of programs and outreach for Nation United and is also the executive director of our nonprofit, the Nation United Foundation. And amongst those many titles, he's also the producer of this episode. So before we get into some really interesting and informative interviews and panels that include Chaz Woodson, Troy Kemp, Lindsay Munez, and Dr. Jonathan Jenkins, I wanted to take a couple of minutes to spend some time chatting with Jeremy about the what and why of this episode, which is titled Playing Hurt, Mental and Emotional Fitness. So hello, Jeremy. How are you doing?
Hey, Brian. I'm doing great, man. How are you?
Good. Doing good, brother. Doing good. You know, you put a lot of time into, you know, coming up with a list of topics that we want to hit in our podcast. And I think it was really important to you and as well as some others, as the rest of us, that this particular topic get pulled in sooner rather than later. Maybe you could tell me a bit about, you know, what was the thought behind this topic and why you felt it's important that we addressed it at this point.
No, that's a great question, Brian. And so, it probably isn't the easiest to answer without giving some background information. Over the past few years, we've had the privilege and opportunity of sitting down with players in closed sessions and really getting the chance to hear from them and peel back the onion about what they're thinking, what they're feeling as athletes and as young men and young women. And as members of a community that is growing, but it's still for the most part, it is a minority community within the sport of lacrosse. And what we found, during some of those sessions, and of course, you know, we, during each of our tournaments, take time to do that. And what we found was that, you know, young men were feeling burnt out. They were in some instances perhaps borderline depressed. And as we began to talk to more parents outside of our circle of players, we found that their children, their athletes were experiencing the same thing. And so we thought that it was important as we talk about diversity in the sport that we also talk about the things that make the sport healthy. And at the core of that, obviously, Brian, and you know it, is mental and emotional wellness. And we've talked about this, and you mentioned it as one of the things that I've done a lot of research on, but you've helped to inspire a lot of conversation that we've had around this with Dr. Jenkins. And we'll, of course, you mentioned, we'll get to him. And of course, with Troy Kemp, and with Lindsay Munoz, all of which have had either experience dealing with depression as a person or personally, or they've helped individuals through mental and emotional challenges over the years and helped to develop, you know, a more healthy young man or young woman just through the work that they do on a daily basis. And so we thought it was great to have those individuals step in and help us through this conversation.
This is an episode, which really not unlike our other episodes. This is an episode that is for everybody, but I also think has a, you know, particular resonance with that minority or non-traditional player in lacrosse. And I appreciate you bringing up how you know, while we were maybe aware that this was important, how as we started to get players together in these you know, sessions where we dug a little deeper, how surprised I was to hear that, you know, players Like, I remember one particular player, one player in particular, which will probably be a marquee player in college in coming years, saying, hey, you know, what do you do when you're just not enjoying it anymore?
Right? Wow.
Just not having fun anymore. And how do I tell my parents?
That's right. Wow.
Right. And then we extend, right? And I think, you know, you and I have both seen, we won't call out names, but also, yeah. I think a couple of outcomes of suffering or struggling emotionally and not having a support system or a way to address it where, you know, either players have acted out, right? I think we've seen a number of players turn to alcohol.
That's right.
Turn to drugs. Or, you know, sometimes players just get fatigued and they just give up.
They just stop playing. We've seen that, right? Where they just said, hey, look, one of the best players in the country, right? You know, relatively speaking. Just say, hey, look, I'm not playing anymore, you know.
You know, I'd like to call out that this is an important aspect of every player's whole being and an important aspect of making every player a complete player as well as a complete person. But we also see in particular existing in this sport as an other, right? Whether it's you're from a non-traditional area or you're a brown or black player on a predominantly white team, or you struggle financially and you're going to the, you know, the wealthy neighborhood in your area to go play with the top club team, that for these non-traditional players, there's kind of an extra level of pressure that grinds away and wears at your mental well-being. Do you have any comment on that?
Yeah, you know, anytime you're the only, right? You're the only one, or you're one of two. Right. You know, there is the extra. Or anytime you know, regardless of color or creed, you know, anytime you're in that situation where, you know, mom or dad, they just don't have, you know, enough money to make ends meet. And so you've got to get that scholarship, which sometimes adds additional pressure, right, to perform. The beauty of, you know, Nation United at its core, right, which is to inspire diversity, is that it allows us to really look at, again, what makes the sport welcoming for everyone. And to the point that you made, you know, when you are a non-traditional or a minority athlete in any setting, it's important that you understand the additional pressures associated with the person who's in that situation. If you're a coach, if you're an administrator, even if you're a parent, it's important that we pay attention to the additional stressors. And the great thing about the Nation United Foundation is while the Nation United Lacrosse Club's mission is to inspire diversity, you know, the foundation's focus will be to figure out how to support diversity in the sport and create more dialogues like this so that we can do this in the most healthy way possible.
Well, awesome. Well, Jeremy, you know, I want to thank you. I happen to know that while this is a concern of all of ours, I know the effort that you've put in to bring this episode and this topic to fruition. So I want to thank you for that.
And, oh, thank you, Brian.
For all the listeners, I want to thank you for joining us for the second episode of Diversity Inside Lacrosse podcast. We'll go ahead and hand it over to Terry to walk us through an interview with Chaz Woodson and walk us through a fantastic panel with Lindsay, Troy, and Dr. Jenkins. And again, thank you. I hope you enjoy.
And the Diversity Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Chaz Woodson, a member of the Premier Lacrosse League player pool and the head coach at Ransom Everglades boys lacrosse team in Miami, Florida. Chaz, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
So I want to start by talking about that, you know, notion. It came a little bit as a surprise to me that you decided that you were going to, you know, test the waters and see what the Premier Lacrosse League looked like. So you're going to go to training camp and see what happens. What prompted that decision?
Yeah, I think it was it's been just as much a surprise to me, really, and it's still kind of unfolding in my head. You know, I decided to stop playing for a few different reasons, and none of those reasons have really gone away. I think I'm sort of just putting them on hold a bit, or potentially putting them on hold a bit. You know, one of them was my body at 36 is just not the same. You know, I have not been able to be a full-time lacrosse player in quite some time. And so the way I'm training and the amount of training I'm doing is not the same as it was. And, after that 17 season with the launch, I realized, excuse me, just what it would take to really be in the shape that I wanted to be in to play the way that I want to be able to play. And so that was part of the reason that I just didn't feel like I had the motivation to want to do that. Then of course there was just the idea of having my summer free, and, you know, part of what I've realized is that my summer's not going to be free no matter what. You know, between Nation United and any other camps, my summer is getting eaten up anyway. So I figured that this seemed like an opportunity that was worth kind of, you know, at least giving it a shot and seeing where it goes. And I think there's always that part of me and part of any athlete that wonders, can you still do it? And it's sort of the same approach I had in 2017. I really appreciated that when Coach Mariano reached out to me, he was very upfront and he said, hey, you know, I'm not going to guarantee you a spot, but we'd love to have you come out. And that's exactly what I wanted, just an opportunity to go out there and do it. And, you know, if I didn't make it and I wasn't playing the way I was used to playing, so be it. And I think that's the same approach here. You know, if I get out there and I can't run, you know, with these guys the way I'm used to being able to run with these guys, and so be it. I'm not going to push myself through a season just to do it. I don't want to be the old guy hanging on that can't play anymore. You know, but if I get out there and it feels good, then we'll give it one more go.
I'm so fascinated by this topic whenever it comes up in any sport. You know, I was enraptured with all of the Dwayne Wade, Dirk Nowitzki content that emerged this week as they played each other for what will be the final time. We know that Dwayne's going to retire at the end of the year. As you mentioned, being a 36-year-old athlete, how is it regarded the way in which you've watched either your peers bring their careers to end, or as a sports fan, folks in other athletic endeavors bring their career to end?
Well, I think it's been interesting with my peers, you know, because in lacrosse, people finish for so many different reasons, right? Some guys finish because of their job commitments or family situation, or it's just not worth the money to them. Staying in shape is different. Competing is different. As much as we love to compete as athletes, it's still not the same as it is competing in college, you know, until you're a full-time athlete and this is what you do, because in college you are yes, you're a student, but you're a full-time athlete. And so it's different. I think so many people, the careers might be 1 year, 2 years, 12 years, and everybody's reason for going out when they go out is so different. So it's been kind of fascinating to watch that. And even when I played that 17 season, just to think of the guys that kind of came in my class or came in a little bit ahead of me, you know, there weren't that many of us around. And so this is the PLL is kind of an interesting scenario for me, having played 1 year in pretty much the last four or five, I think. And, yeah, and then just having that perspective of still being, you know, one of the older guys, not just from an age perspective, but from an from a professional experience perspective, and just being able to hopefully provide some of that leadership. I think the best compliment that I received after that 2017 season was speaking to Brian Clinton, and you know, he said he kind of surveyed, you know, a bunch of the guys on the team and just in the interview process or the exit interview process and about the season. And he said a whole lot of the young guys just mentioned how good it, or how much they appreciated me being in the locker room and reaching out to them and helping them with little things here and there. And I think that was, like I said, the biggest compliment to me, because that's where I felt like I was in my career. Like, I didn't need to be the go-to scorer or the guy that had the ball in his stick all the time. I intentionally set out to be the guy that did the right thing and help these other guys usher in, you know, the beginning or the prime for some of them of their careers. And so I have another opportunity to do that. And if I can get myself ready, and it's enjoyable, I'll be out there doing the same thing.
Right on. So shifting gears, the panel discussion in this podcast was about mental health, and we talked to two high school coaches in Lindsay Munoz and Troy Kemp about their approach. And you're in your second year as head coach at Ransom Everglades High School, and it's become a complementary experience to your player experience. And I'm fascinated by your approach to managing your own mental health and how it's informs the way in which you've tried to build, direct, and help your team and your individual athletes.
Yeah. First of all, those are both phenomenal coaches that you've already spoken to. And Troy Kemp is kind of a master and guru in terms of dealing with, obviously, with his full-time job as the director for the Center of Development of Boys. He knows what he's doing, and so I steal bits and pieces from him all the time. But I think one of the things that's really been key for me as a head coach, well, let me backtrack. I've had opportunities to be a head coach before, and one of the main reasons I stayed at Ransom Everglades as a coach was because I liked the staff that we had worked with over the years, starting with Roy Kelly, who was the head coach up until last year. And for us, it had never been about wins and losses. And we're both as competitive as anybody else, but it's always been about developing young men. And that was important to me. And so when I took over last year, I made sure that that part not only stayed intact, but that it was, that I was very vocal about it. And so all of my guys know that. All of my players know that it's bigger than now. It's about the life lessons. It's about what they're going to become from having been a part of this program. And kind of the second piece of that, in almost contrary fashion, is that we wanted to bring fun back to lacrosse. And I think there were a couple years there where, as a staff, we got so bogged down in trying to make sure these guys understood the life lessons that we kind of lost sight of the fact that when we played as athletes, whether it was lacrosse or basketball or football or soccer or anything else, we still learned those life lessons. But I can't remember too many times that we sat and got lectured about the life lessons and the crossover lessons from sports to life. And those are the things that you pick up 4, 5, 6, 10 years from now. And so we've made a conscious effort to focus on the lacrosse aspect of things, but then put them in scenarios that highlight the life lessons that you want to get out of it, or that you want them to get out of it. You know, so we'll make a life lesson point out of a ball hunt you know, that didn't go as well. We for example, about a week ago, we showed up at the field and the girls were practicing, and I went on a little ball hunt on my own and found five or six balls, and then told the other guys to go find some, and I came back with another four, but I also found one that was buried in the dirt, and there were guys that walked right by me and kind of praised me and, you know, kind of made jokes about me finding that grimy, dirty ball. But that was one that they had overlooked, because to me, that said it wasn't important enough to go find that ball. So anyway, without getting too deep into it, the lesson there was that there's a level of commitment that each player has to have that we weren't exhibiting. And those little details were kind of the differences in some of the games that we had dropped. And but we're able to make those points while keeping it as much as possible about lacrosse, instead of just harping on you're late or you're not doing this or you're not doing that. And when you get into the working world, this isn't going to work and all this stuff. When at the end of the day, they're not there for that. Those are the things that come from, you know, from being part of a program and from being involved in team sports. They come from it later on that you realize down the road. So we've made a very conscious effort to focus on lacrosse, knowing that the life lessons will come from it, but then at the same time knowing that the end goal is all about the life lessons and not so much about the lacrosse, not the wins and losses. And I say it at the parent meeting, our goal every year now is to make lacrosse fun again. So,
and I think that's a really valuable lesson, primarily in the context of a conversation about diversity and inclusion within the sport. You know, one of the things that's really important about being inclusive is you have to be attractive. You have to provide something that folks want to be a part of. And to your point, the threat of not making or not allowing lacrosse to be fun enough is a really big threat. And one of the things I find fascinating is there's been a lot of positivity around the sport over the last 18 months. You know, I think I point to the recruiting rule legislation, which changed the recruiting landscape and I think reduced a lot of pressure on families, particularly families of young players. I think the shot clock in college lacrosse has made the product a lot more exciting, both on the men's and women's side. I think that the prospect of lacrosse's entrance into the Olympics has created a ton of hope. And then lastly, as we began, I think that the creation of PLL has had a hand in increasing the positive vibes around the sport. So my question for you is, you know, in a part of the country where lacrosse is developing but still has a lot of opportunity for growth, how do you regard the way in which the sport is currently being received by people who aren't already playing? And how has it changed over the last 5 years?
Well, I would say, at least down here, for example, this is my 14th year in Miami, 13th at the school, or at least coaching at the school. And the general landscape of lacrosse down here has changed drastically. The level of play has changed drastically. And I think it is regarded pretty highly among everybody, but people that get to witness the game, people that have kids that are now playing that, you know, they never had the opportunity to play. It's sort of the same narrative you hear everywhere else. They all wish they could have played, and they're all happy their kids are playing. And then you meet parents that say, I wish my kid was playing. And so I think there's a lot of positive buzz around the sport here as well. It's just kind of in different pockets. You know, it's not all over Miami. It's not all over the county. But those who know anything about the sport are excited about it. We often get, you know, friends of parents that show up at games and they love it. They're all excited about it, but that's the same thing you see everywhere. I think more and more people are excited to see the sport live. I've had a whole lot of people ask me if the PLL is coming to Florida, that wish it would come to Miami. You know, when I was still playing, always got questions about when we were going to be down here so that they could come and watch. And that was not just from, you know, parents and players, but all kinds of people that I would meet in the community. So I think everybody's on board with it, but there's still a lot of work to do to grow it, as you know.
Sure, sure. And we'll leave you with this because, you know, you're so eloquent and speak so frequently about issues of diversity, racial sensitivity, awareness, broadly and within the sport. I just kind of want to leave you with a open-ended question of what's top of mind right now?
Oh, man. you know, one of the things for me that has kept me, since we're talking about mental health, one of the things that's kept me sane, and I've alluded to this in a couple of different pieces that I've written over the years, is kind of keeping lacrosse at arm's length a little bit. So when it's time for me to put lacrosse down, you know, at the end of a season or whether it's at the end of a career, I put it down. So like those years that I wasn't playing MLL, I didn't watch any MLL. When our season ends in April, whenever we finish up, there's probably going to be a week or two where I don't want to see or think about lacrosse at all. And I've always kind of been like that, and it's been good for me. And so to that point, I steer clear from a lot of the things that are going on, but I also don't try to turn a blind eye. You know, when something comes up, it's got to be spoken about. And I think right now, I find that lacrosse is in this, probably always has been, but it's in a really interesting place right now that sort of mimics American society. I think there are a lot of people that hear of and see issues and are really willing to speak up on them. There's people that are really willing to support people in the sport who have concerns. And then there's a lot of people that would rather not hear about any of the concerns. There's a lot of people that would like to turn a blind eye to them. And then there's a lot of people that just simply don't believe don't believe that they exist. And unfortunately, we don't have enough people that are willing to speak up. We don't have enough people, I think, that are willing to show that they are on the right side of things, whether that's for fear of ridicule or kickback or they're just not comfortable doing it. But there are still some things in this sport or in our community, in the lacrosse community, that need to change, that we need to be more aware of. And but it's going to take some pushing and prodding, and it's going to take some people that are willing to kind of step out on a ledge and maybe jump. Some people might have to jump into some serious scenarios that they're not used to jumping into.
Well, hopefully that can be the call to action. Hopefully that can be the call to action that listeners of this podcast can take. It's kind of a see something, say something mentality, and whether that's saying something is on social media or face-to-face or through another means,
right.
It's about the courage to identify or the ability to identify and then the courage to act. So,
yeah. Well, and along those lines, you know, not everything is not everything has to turn into a major issue, and not everybody that speaks up has to say a whole lot. Sometimes it's just saying something or even acknowledging it. You know, I tend to try not to speak about a ton of things because I know that it's not my place. There, some people speak more than others. And I try to make sure that I speak enough so that people understand that what I believe is important, but not so much that when I do speak up, people don't want to hear it anymore. So I think there's a place for everybody on that spectrum of knowing when to step up, when to say something, when to do the right thing.
Well, Chaz, we really appreciate your time on the Diversity Inside Lacrosse podcast. Good luck both with the rest of the Ransom Everglades season and with PLL once tryouts begin. And we look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Thanks, Terry. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate the time.
And the Diversity Inside Lacrosse podcast with Nation United continues with a panel discussion around the issue of playing hurt. And this topic is focusing on mental and emotional health among lacrosse players, among athletes, among young people across the board. And we're joined by three panelists, all of whom have a direct relationship with Nation United. Lindsay Munoz is a 2014 graduate of Stanford, where she was a goalie on the varsity women's lacrosse team. She is now the head coach of Westlake High School in Southern California, and in the intervening years spent time working with the Winners Lacrosse Foundation in Washington, D.C. Dr. Jonathan Jenkins was a former Division III lacrosse player. He is now a clinical psychologist and serves as the mental health consultant for Nation United. He has touched sports in many ways over the course of his career. And Troy Kemp is the executive director for the National Center of Boys and the head coach at the McCauley School in Chattanooga, Tennessee. He is also one of the five directors of Nation United. And so to begin this topic, Lindsay, I left out that you have contributed to Iowa Women and Inside Lacrosse over the years, and you've been open about the personal connection that you have to the issues of mental health and wellness relative to being a part of a team, relative to athlete performance. And so I'd like to start with that personal connection and why this topic is so important to you.
Sure. So I think it really is on, you know, multiple levels. First being that I played goalie. So, you know, inherently you're dealing with a lot of pressure. You are the last line of defense to let in the goal in or not. So for me, that was really difficult learning how to be okay with, you know, letting the goals go in and realize that it's not completely your fault, because naturally I am a perfectionist you know, also very high achieving as both in school and on the field. So trying to play a position in which perfection is not possible was extremely difficult for me to deal with. And then underlying that, as I grew up, were underlying mental health issues that I didn't feel, honestly, totally comfortable in sharing, because, you know, along with playing goalie comes a sort of mental strength component, as I was previously discussing. And I wasn't really comfortable admitting that I wasn't okay or that I needed help. And so that caused me even further problems later on in my life. You know, as I to identify achiever both in school and on the field, it, you know, led to some problems after I graduated that I ultimately had to face. And I have continued to want to share my story because I think there are a lot of girls and athletes out there that feel similarly and have experienced some of the things that I have. And all it takes is for the individual to be willing to admit that they aren't okay and reach out to get the help that they need. So I really just want to do what I can to make sure that more kids feel safe in opening up and receiving the help that they need.
And Jonathan, this isn't to undersell the personal connection that you have to this issue, but obviously you come at it from a very professional perspective as well. And I'm fascinated by how you hear comments like Lindsay's, regard them, and apply, you know, the lens of your many years of diligent training and experience to the topic.
Well, it really speaks to Lindsay's strength to be an accomplished athlete and also be walking around with mental health stress from her sport, but also experiences that we
can go through on the course of our lives. So to talk about her story is to really talk about the story of a lot of athletes when they're on the field of play. They're trying to do this really complex, beautiful art of sport, in this case, lacrosse. But even on the field, and especially off the field, they're dealing with a variety of issues that really challenge them from a physical and mental health perspective. And so what we really want to do is help reduce some of that burden, that stress, so that on the field they can do the beautiful things that we love to watch and cheer for, but also off the field where they spend the majority of their lives, that they can be successful and they can feel comfortable and they can feel like they can take on the world. Because again, we're working with youth in sports and athletics. We're trying to develop them into the best version of themselves that they possibly can be. If they can have a 50-goal season or they can have a 99% save percentage, that's awesome. That's icing on the cake. But the cake is trying to develop them and help them become physically and emotionally healthy.
And Troy, you have a multi-decades-long career as an educator, and you've manifested the educational components of sport and individual personal development in multiple ways. And so, you know, when you kind of attack the dual perspective of, you know, this is something that I've devoted my life to, as well as this is something that, you know, I have to take care of myself with and be the example that I wanted when I was a young boy, how has that formed your perspective, you know, in an era when the conversation around mental health changes really quickly?
Well, it really is interesting because I think, let's just begin with the reason why I spent the last few years specializing in sharing messages about how to connect with, build relationships with, and how to motivate boys and so forth is because I think about myself, but I also think about these hundreds and thousands of young men that I've worked with over the past 25 years at Macaulay. And for me, it all stems with the definition of what it means to be a man. And also, when you think about an athlete, whether it's male or female, being strong, right? Strength. The definition of strength is usually something that I can see. You know, for boys, it's, I see this kid's strong or he isn't. And then what's the definition of being weak? And I think one of the biggest challenges with myself when I grew up and my son and other athletes as they come through is, you know, no pain, no gain, show no weakness. And now they're at a point where they have, these young people have less sleep than they've ever had before because they're spending more time plugged in and they're overstimulated and they're often receiving messages that are changing their self-esteem on by the second. And so now we're dealing with some young people and some slightly older people who are a little bit less resilient than they've been because some of the challenges have been mitigated by parents. Unfortunately, we love them to death, but we love them enough to stand in front of the, you know, to cross the road for them instead of allowing them to cross the street. But now we're seeing the results of it. And I think it's very important that we raise the flag and, one, let these young men know who think that tough is being stoic and being like Batman, that Batman is fictional. There is no Batman, and you need to be a person that needs to communicate. But it has to be led by people they respect and they admire, who they view as strong in other ways. And we need to be able to show us coaches, us people who are in position of leadership, show strength via communication through vulnerability. So at the end of the day, the shortest version of this is that I was a person who didn't value being very vulnerable because I couldn't trust many people based on my upbringing. I didn't know who was going to leave me and who was going to show up next. And even though these athletes may be able to score 50 goals in a game or stop, you know, make 20 saves, it doesn't mean that they have the kind of stability behind the veil that they need. So I'm very happy to participate in something that could at least shed some light and illustrate some strategies which they can move forward with.
As an avid sports fan, I've read a lot of articles and seen a lot of interviews, particularly over what it feels like the last 18 months to 2 years, you know, things like Kevin Love's and some of the other NBA players' discussions around how they handle stress and anxiety. Troy, do you see the players that you deal with on a day-to-day basis understanding or feeling like mental health is less stigmatized than maybe it was 5 years ago?
Well, some of them don't have a choice because I'm seeing more and more kids who are being medicated. So, you know, you can, the amount of students, they're about 20 times more on mood managing medication than 20 years ago. That's a fact. So you're seeing that they've already been prescribed. So they've gotten help because parents have tried to decide, you know, how to help them manage their lives. But the other piece is, I still think they're kind of hiding from it a bit, but there are enough of them so that there's a critical mass that they're starting to understand that it's okay. But it doesn't matter if they feel that way. They have to have other people in their environment who are creating culture around them, like coaches, like school administrators and so forth, who make it a safe place. So if it's not a safe place, doesn't matter how they feel, they're not going to share.
So I guess, Jonathan, in terms of developing the conversation a little bit farther, what are some of the things that you feel like coaches are best served or parents are best served to, what conversations are they best served to have, you know, with their young athletes to help them develop the tools to be able to handle all the additional and new sources of stress and stimulation that folks are dealing with?
Well, I think two big things are kind of putting all your eggs in one basket and also social media. So in terms of putting all your eggs in one basket, I try to work with my clients about having a holistic approach to life, meaning if they are a really amazing singer, it's great that you've invested a lot of this energy in your singing, but we also need to make sure that your non-singing life is great. And so when we're talking about lacrosse players, whether they're a highly recruited lacrosse player or they just love the sport, making sure that their off-the-field life is just as fulfilling as their on-the-field life. And I think for a lot of youth and a lot of youth who are high-achieving, they focus really a lot of energy on that thing that they're really good at, and the other areas of their lives suffer, and they're not as agile to be able to adjust to the ways that life can kind of ebb and flow and throw stressors your way. And then when it talks about social media, you know, talking to somebody about this recently where, you know, if you get crossed over in an NBA game, that footage and that clip is shown on Instagram millions of times. And you're just playing basketball and you made the right move and you made the right defensive decision, but somebody made just a slightly better play. And so for athletes in this generation, even a minor expected mistake during the course of a lacrosse game can then get magnified and showed on YouTube forever. And so being able to appreciate what the era they grew up in and being able to use that knowledge to really help mold and shift their thinking into a more healthier place. Like, we have an obligation to really do that with the youth that we serve. And we really have a great opportunity to provide them with the skills to ignore disinformation, bad information, abusive information, and keep orienting themselves towards their goals and health and wellness.
So, Lindsay, building on that last point, I'm putting my mind in the point of view of a skeptic who's listening to this conversation and saying, this is, you know, new age stuff that doesn't care about competition and toughness and everything else like that. And yet, to your point earlier, you're a really high achieving player and the team that you coach is really good. So it's not about not getting better. It's not about lowering the stakes in a way, in an effort to reduce the pressure. So how do you square those two things, particularly as you try to help develop your athletes to reach their potential?
Sure, yeah. So that's actually something that has come up with my team because in one of our first games of the season, we had a pretty large win against one of the best teams in Southern California. And after that, our play kind of diminished a little bit. And, you know, I'm watching these games and reflecting after the fact, and I came back to the next practice just to have a discussion as I normally do, which I think is part of this too, is just creating spaces where you can have discussions about how your players are feeling and what they're thinking. But I noticed that more than usual when our team would make mistakes or not play as well as anticipated, really the energy just went really flat. And I just openly had a conversation, you know, like, what do you guys think is the biggest obstacle to our success this season? And more often than not, the conversation was around fear of failure, making mistakes, confidence, something really around the mental game. And, you know, I said, you know, as I was thinking about this, the more you achieve, the more you expect out of yourself, and the bigger the fear of failure becomes. And so instead of expecting us to be the best or expecting us to win, I really made it a point to say, hey, look, guys, moving forward, we're not going to focus on the wins. We're going to focus on those failures specifically and focus on how we are going to improve them every single day. So what we do now is after every single game, they go around and everyone says how they fail and they give each other a clap. And even that subtle conversation, and it really has takes less than 10 minutes to do that, has really made a huge shift in how the players are able to see their performances and be able to just play. Because what I've noticed is that that is when kids are able to perform at their best, is when they're just playing, and that's all they're worried about is what's going on in front of them. And me having the experiences that I do, and knowing what such a high cost is of having those expectations and constantly thinking about them, it's for me personally something that's always in my head of how I can help my kids really focus on just playing the game and having fun while they're out there.
Does that experience inspire you, and does it help you?
Experience of
watching your team go through this acknowledgement and recognition of the way in which they failed, and hopefully seeing them respond by reducing the burden of fear.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's really at the end of the day, all I want for a coach is for them to be successful. And if I can help them in any way, shape, or form, you know, that makes me ecstatic, honestly. But also, it's a really great tool for me as a coach, because I've joined in on it and said, you know, this is where I fail too, which I think is a point that sometimes gets overlooked by coaches, is, you know, trying to have all the answers and always being right. And I really feel that I've been able to build a stronger relationship with my players, because they know that I'm not perfect and I am going through similar struggles as them, and I'm really on their level and going through this with them, not on a separate level from them.
Doc, one of the things that I think is interesting about this conversation existing on the Diversity Inside Lacrosse podcast is that, you know, mental health and wellness and emotional quotient crosses all spectrums. It's not demographically specific. That being said, one of the themes that's emerged in these conversations has been the need for diversity and inclusion and welcoming, creating a welcoming environment among a lacrosse team. You know, one of the reasons that's so important is because if it doesn't happen, it can be a very isolating experience, and that can be one of the factors that heightens these types of issues. So my question for you is, how does the interplay of a healthy individual and a healthy environment coalesce to bring about both a better experience and ultimately what I think one of the goals of this conversation is, which is a better game and a better community around a game?
Right. I think it improves the thinking, right? So one of the things we talk about in psychology is helping people recognize rational versus irrational thoughts, and how irrational thoughts can derail your ability to act appropriately in a situation. And also, it corrupts your ability to accurately understand and appreciate your emotions. So if we talk about that in relationship to the diversity in lacrosse question, stereotypes and prejudice all have to do with a lack of ability to recognize irrational thoughts. And so if we're better able at being able to recognize our stereotypes and our bias and our prejudice, more people are going to be able to have more authentic, honest experiences with the sports, where they'll be judged by their performance on the field and their character as a teammate or as an opponent, as opposed to people bringing in these outside stereotypes and prejudice into the lacrosse field. lacrosse is a sport that's a great equalizer. I always tell people, especially at the younger youth level, that you don't have to be super tall. You don't have to be super fast. There's a spot on the lacrosse field for everybody. And because of that, it should be a very inclusive sport. But there are all these societal and prejudicial forces that come into play. And so when we create an emotional, healthy team, we create players who are able to stop and take a second and say, huh, does that seem accurate? Does my perception of Jonathan on the field really match with my experience of Jonathan on the field? And once they start getting curious about that, they'll be able to rethink their own stereotypes, but they'll also be able to get closer to their teammates and be able to bridge those gaps of different cultures, different life experiences, different ways of thinking, and that helps build relationships.
Troy, you and I have had this conversation before where for as wide of an impact as you want to have, the successes come in the individuals. And so my question is, when you imagine what a positive outcome of a conversation like this is, what does it look like?
Well, this depends on the listener. So the positive outcome, let's just talk about the players, first of all. The players recognize, hopefully they recognize that they do their homework, the people who are on this podcast, and understand that we've been in or around the game and supporting the game enough to know that we've seen the landscape and we've seen the challenges, but we also are trying to offer solutions. So for them to feel like it's safe to communicate. But more importantly, I think, again, it starts at the top. For the adults or for the coaches who are leading these teams to start thinking about how they can change the narrative and having the type of conversation and build the type of trust they need to build with their players, and that's through relationships. You know, one of the things that people don't necessarily share very much is no matter whether you're rich or poor, there are all kinds of experiences that cause you to either have the ability to build relationships easily or you really neglect some of the relationships that you can have because you don't trust people. That was me, even though I'm more of an extrovert than most people, but I've just seen it in players. And here's what I can say. Success looks like a player that can connect with a coach at any time to make sure that they're able to be their best, because ultimately what you said is we want this to be a better game, and a better game begins with better players on the field and players that are not carrying an anchor, you know, not carrying a weight vest, not trying to play with a weight vest because they're worried about they shake too much on the field. And so somebody's going to think that that's because they're from this community or that community. And there's no place for that. I'm just, you know, at the end of the day, I see a lot of kids who come play for me who are from all over the country. And the number one thing they're looking for is a place where they can be safe, meaning they can be themselves. And so when this comes back and how this is woven back into the diversity piece, I do think there's another layer because lacrosse has more of a fraternity than a lot of other sports in terms of the homogeneous fraternity, if you would. And that is changing. But truthfully, I do understand that some great kids are coming from strong programs, but they'd rather be here because they'd rather be heard. It's that simple.
And I guess along those lines, these things develop in moments as well. And one of the things about this moment in time is late March, early April is, you know, that's kind of when seasons pivot, you know? And so I would imagine a lot of the players that are listening to this are doing so, you know, with the mindset of, oh man, I can't believe that happened in my last game. Or, you know, I really want to be able to say this to coach. So I kind of want to be able to put this to each of the three of you as we end this portion of the podcast. What advice do you have to that 14-year-old in terms of either getting over a past failure or working up the courage to forge toward a future success? And Troy, let's start with you.
So my first strategy is, number one, you know, you got to have time to process. So I think it's all about perspective. To be able to shift the perspective, they have to de-escalate the situation. So, you know, with some kids, you know, if something happened yesterday, they've had at least 24 hours. But I think when and where is so important nowadays. So I would say, one, give it time. I always tell kids to drink water to lower their cortisol levels, because a lot of kids, I mean, I had a parent call me the other day, his son acted out in a really bad way, and he was like, what do I do? I tried to help, but I'm dad. So I had a conversation with the boy, but also gave him a couple strategies. But that having enough time to kind of change your perspective and look at it a little bit differently. Also, if you're going to be a baller, you got to have a short memory. I mean, it's just, you just have to decide that you're not going, you can't carry a certain amount of weight if you want to get to a certain altitude. You got to let it go. And that's a decision you got to make, or you can stay at a certain altitude. So when I talk to these young men, I said, you know, it's like a goalie. You got to let the last shot go because the next one's coming. It's just the way it works. And so really just trying to speak your language and saying, I know that's hard to do, but that's necessary depending on where you want to go. But the last piece I'll say is sometimes kids can't say what they feel, so they got to find a way to express it. So I sometimes with these young men, I'll say, hey, just write what you think you might want to say to your coach if you can't say it. And the girls can do the same thing, and find a trusted individual that you have in your community or in your life, and share it with them and say, do you think this is appropriate? Because they will have a different perspective because they're not as emotionally involved. And then at that point, either they can say it or they can share it in that way.
Jonathan, words of advice to a young listener?
Sure. Just in the interest of time, I'll definitely echo everything that Troy said. And one addition that I would add is to remind people that mistakes are common and that you want to take a lesson from a mistake. So if I have a failure, if I have a loss, if I can take data from that and that data makes me a stronger player, then I'm thankful for that loss because it was an opportunity for me to learn and to grow as an individual on the lacrosse field or as a human. And so really seeing losses and failures as learning opportunities as opposed to an opportunity where my weaknesses, my immaturity, my lack of skill is exposed. Because again, in sports or in life, you're going to lose, there are going to be failures. So we really want to normalize that and really reframe it as a learning opportunity as opposed to, wow, look how weak you are. Wow, look how quote-unquote stupid you were for getting that wrong. So I think once people make that shift, they're a lot more comfortable with accepting losses, even though they want to be successful, and they're more comfortable and more capable of extracting that data, that useful data from those losses.
And Lindsay, the final word?
Yeah, so just going off of that, what I would say is that a lot of times what I see is that kids get caught up in, you know, what do those mistakes mean for their future, when instead really you should be focusing on what you can control, and, you know, going off of using what happened in the game as lessons, really taking the time to focus on what exactly those mistakes are and what you can actually do to improve. Because what I found is thinking and ruminating on what has happened in the past really does you no good to improve your game. And so what I like to do is just have kids watch film and take it and learn and see what are the actual skills you can improve on, and talk to your coach and see if you can come up with a plan on how to improve that. Because if you do that, that's going to build your confidence and ultimately lead to better performance down the road.
Well, Lindsay, Jonathan, Troy, we really appreciate your time on the Diversity Inside Lacrosse with Nation United podcast. And we hope to speak with you again soon.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.